listening to the Confessions of a Clairvoyant Housewife podcast. From marriage to menopause and margaritas, nothing is off the table. This is Cindy Goldenberg.
Hello, everyone. This is Cindy Goldenberg. I know it's been a really long time since I've done a podcast and reached out to all of you. However, I have a really good excuse. Like I've talked before in previous podcasts and told you about my ailments and aches and pains, I had breast reconstruction from a mastectomy that I had a year ago, and I recovered, and then I had the second part of the breast reconstruction in December. However, during that time, my sciatic nerve pain that was in my back and my hip became more and more excruciatingly obvious. After moving here to Virginia to be closer to my family, I am so grateful because it's an outstanding university, which means it's a teaching hospital, and you have exemplary, extraordinary research and doctors available. Saying that, I found a wonderful spine surgeon who finally found what was happening to me, where my disc was coming out and literally squeezing into my spinal column, causing severe pain throughout my hip and leg. And so for months, I tried extra nerve blocks and injections, and then I had to be put on the schedule for surgery. And it was very long, like 2.5 months. So during that time, I did a lot of introspection and reading, and I just could not literally sit in a chair, even a great one like the one I'm sitting in now. I couldn't sit in order to talk or do a podcast. And so on June 17th, I had my surgery. I had my lumbar fusion and another part that I forget how you pronounce, where they scrape the bone a little bit and make room for the nerve to expand. And let me just say, I think years ago, or I know years ago, if you had lumbar spinal fusion, L5 or L4, you would be in the hospital for quite a long time because it's very difficult to transition from standing to sitting, and especially sitting to lying. Like, you can't lift your legs to put them up into the bed. It's better if someone helps you. And there are so many things that you cannot do without a lot of powerful drugs. Anyway, I survived. I'm not going to tell you go out and do it, but I'm 6 weeks post-op, and I'm walking, and I can't bend or lift or twist, but I do feel 90% better with the pain that I had, and I just have a bright future where I feel like I'm going to have a life back. So saying that, I am back. I'm back now with a lot to say. This talk today is about personal discovery. Why? Because as I told you, I had this operation, and part of the university doctor program is they take care of their patients with follow-ups and a, quote, team leader, a person that coordinates all your therapy in home or at somewhere else, and they make sure that all your needs are being taken care of. Almost like a social worker, I guess. But anyway, it's a great program, and I am grateful that I have somebody just to check in once a week to see how I'm doing. And one of the services that they offered was a psychologist, a counselor, because so many times people after surgery, they're cooped up or they, you know, they can't get out or they want to talk to somebody or they get depressed. And I thought, yeah, that's a good idea. And I go, but I'm good. I have family. I have dogs visit me. You know, I'm good. And after a couple weeks, you know, no sleep and difficulty, and also recovery and being sequestered in my home with my husband that I do love and I have been with for 40 years. I do have a lot of things in my life and in my relationship and the way that I have raised my children I wish I could do over. And one of the things that I'm ashamed of is arguing and bantering and being angry and agitated and irritated because I am psychic. I'm clairvoyant. It takes me a nanosecond to breathe in and see and feel light. So to be around anyone who can't or won't or who disrupts my joy in that way really irritates the shit out of me. But more than that, I mean, I'm being funny on one hand. But on the other hand, when my person, my team leader, called me and said, "Are you feeling good about yourself and do you feel happy?" And I said, "Yes." And then I hung up and thought, "No." So I called and left a message and I said, "You know what? I would like to talk to a counselor, a therapist, because it's not about my back or my surgery or my situation, but I'm seeing a pattern that I've had with my husband for a very long time. And I read books and I pray and I talk and I argue and I hammer it out. And I am tenacious and focused and willing. But to be honest, it's not working. And being in a situation where you can't grab the keys and go drive to the mall or go get on an airplane and go fly somewhere to go see family or friends is difficult only because it glares you in the face that you have unresolved issues and you have relationship difficulties because there's parts of you that aren't healed. Blah, 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 blah. Man, I've heard that a million times. Take a bath. Do something for yourself. Prioritize. I get it. I get it. I teach it. I preach it. I know all about it. I forgive it. I've seen it. I've channeled it. I've done this for so many people. But to take time to explore personal discovery, I'll tell you, it takes courage and commitment. For me, the courage meant intention to grow, to learn, to let go, to love, to forgive, and mostly to understand. The commitment for me was about having no fear, which sounds like courage, but it was more like a physical act of, I've got nothing to lose, and I'm not afraid. And commitment also meant consistency and awareness and time and patience and, again, understanding. So basically, I asked this woman, you know, why do I do the things that I do? Why do I react the way I react? Why is this pissing me off? Why am I in this situation? Now, like I say, I'm going to share with you the things that I've learned not only through books and awareness, but that she has taught me. I've gone to therapy before, and I have worked with dozens, and I'm talking dozens of therapists for myself and for them. They help me in a lot of ways, and they want to hear what I got to say or how I tune into things or how I see things. So I've had for years, I mean, I think when I first started and I went to my first lecture, I sat next to a therapist. So I've always had an idyllic experience with them. I respect them. And I thought about becoming one. But in the beginning, when I would read books, I'd start to see colors on the page and then I'd hear voices. And I thought, I can't really concentrate anymore. So I'm going the other ethereal direction. But anyway, what I want to share with you is personal. It's very personal. It's my life, and it's that conversation between me and me. Things that I love to share and teach and inspire through my years of counseling and channeling and hearing higher blissful beings and voices and higher souls, I'm so grateful for. But the part in my real life, day to day, I never understood in a cognitive book profile sense concepts like narcissistic defense, borderline personality, irrational self-sabotaging, self-defense, and emotional abuse. I mean, I knew it. I lived it. I saw it. I was raised that way. Who wasn't, really? Who hasn't had a finger in that pie in some direction, one way or another? But to really dissect and put aside the ethereal, loving, blissful energy and come down to earth and work in rock hard, not science, but pragmatic modalities. And I do this through this wonderful counselor that I met, who is like listening to a phenomenal instructor. It's like a masterclass and wordsmith. And as I talk and say things, she'll stop politely and interrupt and say, "Do you realize you've said that 3 times? Do you realize this word that you're saying really means this?" And I write note after note after note, and I get so inspired because she's really, really listening to me and my method. Now, when I tell you it took courage and commitment, it wasn't like you had to force me to do this. It's just, it's easier for me to do things for other people or to be available, you know, if I'm not going to be teaching and doing workshops besides my online class that I did that a lot of people like. Thank you very much. But in person, I'm not doing a lot of things. I want to because that's what's satisfying and uplifting. But to be in a relationship where I know my husband that I love, and usually right here I would say, but, and she would correct me, my counselor, and say, but means it's either or. Use the word and or however or something else that includes both. So I love my husband and he infuriates, agitates, irritates, and upsets me. And I've always blamed him, but also have, and I'm not going to defend this. I'm not going to analyze it because I can't. I'm just going to share and report it. I have this unrelenting, malignant optimism where I can show him the way. I can show him the light. One more talk. One more round. One more you're not getting out of this room. One more page of Course in Miracles. One more listen to it, look at it this way. But it seems as time goes by and the kids are gone, and we're with only each other, there is something wrong with this broken record that's skipping. There's something wrong with this pattern that won't go away. And so regardless of whether he has borderline personality disorder a little bit or a lot, because I've read there's 262 kinds and we all have a little of it, narcissistic defense mechanisms. We all do protective mechanisms and methods that from anger to sabotage to self-sabotage to bullying to cowering to people-pleasing, etc., etc. But instead of just reading it in a broad sense, and a lot of these books and online articles are like, yep, they're out there, the narcissistic people, these narcissists, boy, they're going to come and suck your brains out. You got to watch. And what I feel is like that perpetuates an us and them and a us and them. And it isn't. It's all of us. But I am in a relationship where I can clearly see that I see the world in one way and my partner sees the world in another way and falls classically onto a page of gaslighting and immature childishness. And then I do this tenacious control, fixing, teaching, counseling, mediating. And even though we both come from backgrounds of narcissistic parents to codependent parents to alcoholic parents to everything from soup to nuts, I think as much as he was privileged, his scenario is worse. But saying that, I am now ashamed to say and recognize out loud that I've done my own harm and damage to my own children. I've done my own immature, childish acts to my own children. So now I'm done. And I asked her and told her all of this. And I asked her, why do I do what I do? And I also said, I'm extremely clairvoyant. I'm psychic. I'm whatever you want to say. I gave her a very brief rundown. And I have this ability to just pop into this part of a higher reality. And she didn't blink an eye. And she explained to me, oh, but of course, that's your primordial brain. So when she explained to me about this primordial brain, and she said, that part of you, that is your emotional part of your brain, and it's also responsible for meditation. But I'm talking really involved, dedicated hours of meditation and transcendental meditation and having the ability to really go out of body. And she explained to me, you got that. You're there. That part of you is polished and well-oiled, and it works effortless for you. However, the cognitive, the nuts and bolts, the part of you that can't act on it or implement or pull out and extract from the emotional part, cannot apply it into actions or see things in yourself, is so diminished because the other part is so highly evolved and polished. In other words, you're lopsided. But I think a lot of people are, especially because we're spiritual and forgiving and sensitive and an empath. And there's books on, oh, we're sensitive and we're empath and we're affected. Yep, we are. And we can. And we can enhance that. And we can use it and utilize it. And it's called your intuition. And you can use it in so many specific and individual unique ways. But there's that word, but. Mine is 99% and the other part of me. And I used to think it was just because they took away my bioidentical compounded hormones after I had breast cancer a couple years ago, although I do use a little bit because I'm allowed to. But I thought, oh, I don't have the chemicals in my brain anymore to make me calm. And I get so agitated and I just can't handle it because I want to go back into that blissful state. And my counselor reminded me, going there is addictive like anything else, like a drug or a drink or an act or a denial. It's your go-to happy place where you can hide and not work on the other parts. That made sense. And I said, I understand that completely. So now I go back to my opening statement. Why do I do what I do? So basically, I feel we don't ask the why because we are so used to feeling and identifying and compartmentalizing in the way that we understand and we're doing the best that we can. But she told me, you got to go deeper with cognitive book learning and tools and new meanings in order to understand why you do what you do, why you react the way you do, why you cry, why you scream, why you block, why you hurt, attack, retreat repetitively, even though you know you're doing it. So I had this book and I remember reading this line and I was one of my first questions I had with her. And it's called Adult Children of Emotionally Immature Parents, How to Heal from Distant, Rejecting, or Self-Involved Parents. Well, I don't think I was that. I know quite a few. I know they're not my family, but anyway, I make jokes, but this part I liked. This author of this book is Lindsay C. Gibson, and she says, why the past repeats itself. The most primitive parts of our brain tell us that safety lies in familiarity. Boy, and that just stood off the page for me. And so when I shared that with my counselor, I said, you know, I see in myself, and I've taught for so many years, like, you know, why does the kid or child that's abused or why does someone go back or have sorrow or sympathy and empathy for the abusive parent like myself? My father was very violent, especially towards my mother, because you know they're sick, right? So, but you're safe with that. So you can grow up your whole life. And as long as that's not happening anymore, you can overcome anything because you did. So that familiarity isn't specific to the act. It's specific to the feeling that you have. And she explained that to me and said, yeah, you're used to something, but you have to reach out and go a little further. So as I realize I'm staying in this familiar pattern, even though I'm so pissed and I'm so aggravated and I just cannot believe that this grown man that I have been with for 40 years is acting this way and saying these things and making no sense and blaming me and gaslighting and starting this cycle and circle of just this hamster wheel of hell again. And I'm in it again. And I'm pissed and triggered again. And I read in this other book, The Covert Passive Aggressive Narcissist, by Debbie Mirza. And she says, one reason covert narcissists are so damaging is because of cognitive dissonance. And I went, wait, what? I mean, I've heard that word, two competing thoughts, but wait, what? Is that me? Is that my husband? Say it again. So I read it again. One reason covert narcissists are so damaging. They don't have to be damaging. I just thought I'll fill in my own words. Annoying, getting you triggered, pissed off because you are a codependent and you can't just let go and walk out of the room and do something healthy. It's because of cognitive dissonance. So that's two competing thoughts in your mind. And she says, could this person really have been controlling and manipulating me for years and I didn't see it? Or were things really my fault and I'm just over-dramatizing my experience? She continues by saying, you have a solid belief that has formed over years that this is a good person who cares about you. And at the same time, they are being incredibly cruel and controlling. This cognitive dissonance is dizzying and crazy-making. And I read that to my counselor and asked, how did I get here? So when I read that, I just thought, this is what's going on. And before I called to make an appointment with her, on another page, Debbie Mirza says, reading this book, you'll be able to help yourself and you will be free. And I went, wait, what? The word free. Life will actually feel enjoyable and you'll be glad you're here. I promise you this is all possible. And I read that and I thought, I have to learn to elevate and deal with this person, my husband. I've already dissected all of my other toxic relationships that I allowed to happen, that I was the minister, the angel healer, the understanding mediator, that they were damaged, hurt, abused. And even though a lot were clients first and became friends, I always took the upper road. And then I went one day, oh my God, I just attract these people like bees to honey. So when I read this book, The Covert Passive Aggressive Narcissist by Debbie Mirza, I thought, wait, this isn't about him or other people. My husband, my kids, my friendships, my working co-workers. It's about me. So my counselor told me since cognitive dissonance is two competing thoughts, I therefore have three choices. Number one, to reject it completely. Block it out of my mind, which I've done for so many years. I got to get kids. I got to do this. I got to take care of my mom. Got to take care of my dad. I got to go over here. I got to do all the gotta. That's life, especially as a mother. Or number two, you can believe it and reject the old ways, which means you believe it. You understand that this person says they love you. And yes, they are causing the pain and frustration in your life, but you're going to reject the old ways because you have in your mind that it's going to get better. Or you can just accept it and assimilate it and broaden. This is the key word. She told me, broaden your perspective. And I wrote down, I have to broaden my perspective. So I got to do me. It's about me. This opens up wider and makes a broader perspective because it's up to me to learn ways to look at it differently. I said, I'm in. I want to assimilate. She then explained to me about the psychic brain and the time and space in the cognitive brain. The time and space that we are in our life, in our schedules, and who we are compared to other people, differentiates different realities. And then the psychic brain transcends, and it's blissful and it's addictive, like I said. It's also termed escapism. It's a safety behavior, and it reduces suffering. And you do it to avoid suffering. But when you avoid your suffering, be it through your husband that you call a childish borderline narcissist, gaslighting, argumentative, provoking ass, which he may be, that I love and I wish didn't do what he did. But then I had to stop and say, wait, this is about me. I am avoiding something deep in my life, deep in my heart, deep in my subconscious, this suffering. So my, quote, behavioral mechanism which protects me from pain isn't anger and provocation like my husband, but it's about escaping into avoidance, into mediation, into the controlling teacher, mother, mediator, caregiver, problem solver, teacher, I'm going to beat your head over it until you learn it, person. And so I now see, regardless of the title of who and what role we're playing, we're still sabotaging ourselves because we're protecting ourselves from pain. But she reminded me, my counselor, that this isn't ordinary pain. It's deep, unresolved suffering. So how do you let that come up? How does that gas that's stewing in this trapped environment, this chemical or whatever it is in our body, this toxic part of us, how do we let it escape? How do we release it and let it go? How do we invite it? Well, first you just become aware. And she told me, you live according to your values. And she gave me a sheet about 5 pages long of so many values, from success to happiness, freedom, joy, reverence, commitment, so many words and terms. And the assignment was to just circle a few and what stands out to you without thinking, just what is your feeling. And the one that I went to first was freedom. And it wasn't like, oh, freedom, I love this. It was, oh my God, freedom, I don't have. But anyway, I identified my values, and now I'm learning to put my emotional values with an operational value, meaning an action, putting an action to it, putting meaning to it. And so she told me, when we move through life with our values and we choose a handful and we stick with them repetitiously, then we are working on ourself versus anyone else. Because the bottom line is, no matter what, you cannot fix or change anyone else. You cannot create a different outcome through coercion. You are not responsible for making others happy or sad, and their acceptance or rejection of you has nothing to do with your own happiness or frustration or feelings. It has nothing to do. They have nothing to do with your happiness or your anger or your frustrations, Cindy. And that started to resonate. What she is teaching me is that situation turning out the way you want it to has nothing to do with you being happy. You have to learn to step back and identify your own happiness, regardless of conflict or even continuity. So I've read this, I've seen it, but now it's making sense. So like I told you, one of the words that I wrote on my value sheet were freedom, because it jumped off the page, because I thought, oh my God, I'm not getting this. I need to be free of being available as a target. I need to be free of being responsible for his feelings or his abuse or his frustration or whatever is on his mind that he wants to take out. I have to be free of teaching and explaining or demanding and defending. And then I have to be free of being triggered with manipulation or control or patronized or gaslit or humiliated. I have to be free because I want to be valued. And I go, why? Because I relish my joy. I relish my reverence. I relish my faith. I relish my conviction, my God-spirit connection, and my ability to trust and know and receive. And she listened, and we dissected all these words, and she was so, not complimentary, but just encouraging of how articulate and how polished I was to be able to get in touch with so many descriptions and how that would look. But we both agreed that my first reaction of freedom was something I didn't have. It's like saying, what would you like? What would you like to manifest? Well, I don't want this. and I don't want that. That wasn't the question. What do you want? I couldn't answer. I could only see what I didn't have. And when I said, I don't want to be responsible, she stopped me and said, let me just remind you, that thought of being responsible or being responsible by being available to that person or being responsible for someone, responsibility isn't an emotion. It's a choice. And that hit me between the eyes. And I thought, oh my God, my whole life I've always felt obligated and it's my duty and responsibility. So as I continue, and we're having a downpour, so you'll probably hear the rain in the background, I went on to explain my homework and say what all my words meant to me. And like joy, for me, is a natural state that I feel and realize and enjoy in each and every moment. I could look at a weed in a flower bed and still see a little moth or butterfly come by and be happy as if I just won a trip on a cruise ship. I don't need to have something happen to me in order to tune into that happiness. But I sure do get triggered. So the number one thing she told me is your awareness. You just have to keep redefining it. And this is an example. Like self-knowledge is not becoming better. Just because I read more, I'm better. Just because I'm committed to becoming a better person or more aware, I'm better. She said it's about self-improvement. So you're not comparing yourself to anybody else but your own self. You're picking out the parts of you in the middle of the night, your conversation between you and you. You're being aware of those urges of wanting to protect somebody even though you know they're awful. And you think, why is my stomach turning? Or why don't I want confrontation when I'm getting stepped on by someone I love or a family member or a friend? Or why don't I want to rock the boat or whatever it is? These are your feelings. These are your intuitive hits. And if you can observe them and not judge them and understand it's okay to have them because your entire life you have worked with what you know. You are speaking the only language you know. You are using the only tools you know. So it isn't about self-knowledge, it's about self-improvement. So what I want to leave you with is that even if you don't reach out and get a counselor, therapist, or a person, if you can find someone to just talk to, I know from experience when I have listened to people because they're talking, I close my eyes and see green, green heart chakra. Green light of love and healing. The green light of as perfection already exists. The green glowing light of this is earth. This is dimension. This is reality. This is texture. This is alive. That energy comes through when we're being heard. And when we're being heard, we're being valued. And when we are being valued, we are being healed. Therefore, the green chakra energy color aura is associated with healing. Archangel Raphael. But it isn't healing as if something is broken. It is healing as if this is the nature of all things good and healthy. So even though I've known this for over 23 years, I am now realizing that I've only done this for others. Yes, it's addictive. Yes, it's blissful. Yes, it puts me in a wonderful feeling of helping and ministering people, which is so fulfilling, and it is for many people. And I'm not saying I don't want to not do that, but I realize there's another part that got shut down, that the part of me that is using it as a codependent blinders to other parts of me, where it makes me feel good to be needed. It makes me feel good to come in and help elevate, help bring in the angels, help do a reading, help teach, help this, help others, help others, help others. I'm not doing it for myself. So if you can find someone to talk to, it will elevate your awareness that your natural need to be heard is part of your healing process. The other thing is, if you can't find someone to talk to yourself, and also journal, write, get your thoughts out, get your frustrations out. Because something that is part of you, that eternal higher self connected to all that is, and that divine universe, that divine angelic team, you will hear that voice or voices. You will hear those thoughts that are encouraging. You will get those symbols and signs, and you will be guided in the right direction. All of this comes under self-nurturing, self-care, and self-discovery, which is the pathway to understanding. And so I encourage you to find ways to explore what your subconscious is saying. And like my counselor told me, anything ignored that is part of your psyche, that is hidden in your soul and subconscious, will become louder and louder, repetitive, more direct, and will get your attention because that's what it needs. And so my cyclical arguments, my thinking I could heal and manipulate and create a different outcome through my own prayerful techniques, I have learned, is really my disguise and not understanding why I do the things I do. So I invite you to look within yourself and stay tuned for part two, where I explain what I've learned about parentified children like myself. It's the child that becomes the parent, where the roles are reversed. So in the meantime, know you're always loved, know you cannot fail, and that the universe is for you and not against you.
You have been listening to the Confessions of a Clairvoyant Housewife podcast with intuitive expert Cindy Goldenberg. To learn more or stay connected, be sure to visit www.cindygoldenberg.com.